Good afternoon and welcome. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. Before we talk about some of the movies that we want to catch this weekend, a few items in the news this week that I want to make sure you've heard about. At about 10:30 this morning, a 4.8 magnitude earthquake hit Hunterdon County, New Jersey. Shaking was felt throughout the Northeast and here in central Maryland as well. The U.S. Geological Survey reports it was centered about 4 miles northeast of White House Station, New Jersey. There have been reports of damage to some homes in the Baltimore area. This is a developing story, of course, and we'll keep you updated as information becomes available. Pamela Wood of the Baltimore Banner reports that Churchill Downs, a publicly traded company that runs the Kentucky Derby, has expressed interest in buying the Pimlico racetrack here in Baltimore, the home of the Preakness. Maryland lawmakers are currently considering a plan wherein the state would take over Pimlico. The House has passed a bill greenlighting the sale. It's not clear the Senate will do likewise before the session ends on Monday night. Legislators have reached an agreement on the budget in the General Assembly, so it looks as though the extension of the session that Governor Moore made possible, if needed, will in fact not be needed. Sine die, as it's known, is on track to happen at midnight Monday night. The budget does not include hikes in income taxes or sales taxes, but there are targeted increases in fees for things like car registration, ride-sharing services, and cigarettes. There's also a separate bill being considered that would raise taxes on guns and ammunition. All told, the fee and tax increases are expected to raise $91 million a year initially for public education, $335 million for transportation projects, and $114 million per year for the state's trauma health care system. Baltimore City State's Attorney Ivan Bates announced the arrests of 20 juveniles he says are responsible for 53 crimes over a period of several months. The crimes include armed carjacking, armed robbery, and assault. Bates stressed that his office will hold parents accountable for the illegal actions of their young children. Bates said, quote, "If you are found to be contributing to the delinquency of a minor child, my office will look to charge you." He made those comments at a press conference on Wednesday. And today, the Labor Department released more good news about the U.S. economy. Job growth remains very strong. Employers added 303,000 jobs in March. That's about 100,000 more than economists had expected. Unemployment was down slightly, too. It's now been under 4% for more than 2 years. That's the longest stretch at this level since the Vietnam War. And here's what's up with the Key Bridge recovery and rebuild. Officials at the Unified Command Center overseeing the work at the bridge announced this week that a third channel for smaller boats has been opened as the efforts to clear the debris from the crash site continues 24/7. In a statement issued last night, the Army Corps of Engineers said that they're aiming to reopen the permanent 700-foot-wide by 50-foot-deep federal navigation channel by the end of May, restoring port access to normal capacity. The Corps also said they plan to open another smaller channel by the end of April. That channel would allow some barge container service and some vessels that move automobiles and farm equipment to pass through the port. And in arts news, Julia Marchari Alexander announced Wednesday that she will step down as director and CEO of the Walters Art Museum to become the president of the Samuel H. Kress Foundation in New York. That foundation supports the study of European art, architecture, and archaeology, stuff that Julia knows a lot about. She has been the head of the Walters for the past 11 years. She'll leave the museum in August. And that music can mean only one thing, that it's time to roll up in a fetal position under the table and hide from that terrible arrangement of Hooray for Hollywood. It's midday at the movies with Jed Dietz, the founding director of the Maryland Film Festival. Good to see you.
Good to see you.
And Anne Hornaday, the film critic for the Washington Post and the author of Talking Pictures, How to Watch Movies. Good to see you, Anne.
It's good to see you, Tom.
And speaking of books, as we often do here, even though we're supposed to be talking about movies, you are about to take a book leave from your position as chief film critic for The Washington Post to write another book. Now, let me guess. This one's called How to Watch Grass Grow.
That's right. Exactly. Paint dry.
Can't wait. Right. Can't wait. I got it. I pre-ordered it on Amazon. But you're going to write about a very interesting and famous movie.
I am. Yes. This is a dream project of mine that is finally coming to fruition, and it is a history of the production and legacy of All the President's Men, which is one of my very favorite movies. Obviously, it means a lot to the Washington Post. It changed journalism. It changed politics. It changed cinema. And I want to write about all of that and how it all came together.
Terrific. Well, can't wait for that. And so you will probably not be with us very much for the next few months while you go out and do book stuff. But we look forward to having you back and to reading the book. And Jed Dietz, you are the founder of the Maryland Film Festival, and the 25th anniversary of said festival is happening next month on May 2nd. That's going to be exciting. It's back.
It is exciting. I've been retired for a bunch of time, and it's fun. It's been fun seeing this festival get put together by K.J. Moore and her team. I bought all access passes already. I'm excited about it. I've seen a couple of the films. I saw the opening night film was at Sundance. It's a sensational documentary about Luther Vandross. I hope all these pieces come together just the right way for the new team.
Of course, and the film festival had to forego a festival last year. WYPR actually put on a festival in the summer, and WYPR will put on another one. I think tentative plans are to have it sometime in October, so plenty of time between the Maryland Film Festival in May and that one in October. But we will invite K.J. Moore, the programming director of the film festival, to be with us next month when the festival opens, and we'll talk about what's happening there. So that'll be fun. So, Anne, you wrote a piece about sort of looking ahead to cinema, given what happened in 2023. The headline of the piece was, the Oscars are the past. Here's what I want for the future. And you asked some very trenchant questions.
I wish I could remember what they
were. Well, don't worry, because you didn't answer them, so I'm going to ask you to answer now. Will superhero fatigue finally prove fatal to the genre that has monopolized the attention economy for two decades? Will the streaming spigot slow to a trickle, forcing auteurs to find new homes for their pricey passion projects? And will Quentin Tarantino have retired only to be replaced by an AI avatar? I think he's already done that. So I'm not.
Yes, one could argue.
I don't care that much about Mr. Tarantino. But, you know, as you look back, 2023, the Oscars were pretty predictable. I mean, Barbenheimer, Oppenheimer, et cetera. But, you know, looking ahead, I mean, there was a strike. So there's less product for this year, for 2024. What's that going to mean? You know, what's that going to mean for projects moving forward? Is there going to be a whole slew of them green-lighted because, you know, they got time to make up, they got to catch up, or what's going to happen? What do you think?
Well, from what I'm hearing, you know, from friends and colleagues and people on the ground, I don't think, you know, I think contraction is sort of the watchword right now. I mean, we're seeing studios, you know, Paramount is up for sale. The streamers are kind of reaching the end of those golden day, you know, the days of milk and honey. And so we're going to see some contraction there. I mean, what I was really interested in about last year was that the Barbenheimer, the two big phenoms, were not superhero movies. Those were both original, you know, arguably, even though Barbie was called adapted at the Oscars, it was a very original idea.
And they're not franchises.
They're not franchises. Yeah, they brought in, you know, just oodles and oodles of people to the theaters. And I, you know, speaking of the Oscars, one of my very favorite speeches of the night was Cord Jefferson, who won the adapted screenplay Oscar for American Fiction, when he said, "Hey guys, rather than making these $500 million movies, why don't you make 10 $50 million movie?" You know, he was calling for this greater kind of diversity within the ecosystem of different types of films at different scales and scopes, and that's what I would like to see. And I think, you know, some of the undersung lessons from last year were things like The Boys in the Boat, you know, George Clooney's drama about this 1930s rowing team from Washington, which is sort of the University of Washington, which didn't get a lot of fanfare, is probably not, you know, his greatest film, but it got audiences. I mean, people went to see that in the theaters. It
that was such a great
well.
Book.
Yes, I know. People, and
the
a
book
lot of
was
it was
amazing.
On the...
And the book is describing boat races.
Exactly.
Talk about, you know, how to watch grass grow.
Right.
I mean, give me a break. How do you do that? Well, he did it so compellingly.
Well, to your point, that book has so many passionate fans. And I think one of the reasons the movie did well is that the word went out. He did a pretty good job. You know, he did well by the story. Or that little rom-com, you know, Anyone But You with Sydney Sweeney and Glenn Powell, did gangbusters. Again, not a great movie, but it proved that people will still come. They do want to come into theaters. And what I really am looking at now, Netflix picked up this wonderful Richard Linklater film called Hitman with Glenn Powell. If you liked him in Anyone But You, believe me, you will love him in this movie. He is so good. And it's charming, funny. It's a rom-com with action and really smart. And my big question now is, will Netflix let that play in theaters? Because it is a theatrical movie. It demands to be seen with an audience. And we know his audience is there from Anyone But You. So I'll be very interested to see what they
do.
Yeah,
and Jed, before we go to you, I want to go to listeners. 410-662-8780. That's our number, 410-662-8780, or email midday@wipr.org. It's a question we ask you virtually every month. Are you going to theaters? Are you staying home? Are you making your choices based on the movie? Are you making your choices based on COVID-19? Are you making your choices based on what you feel like doing on Friday? Do you feel like staying in or going out? How are you deciding? Are there a certain kinds of movies that, oh yeah, I got to see that in the theater? You know, you want to see Oppenheimer in the theater? You know, do you want to see these some of these big blockbuster things with all the action and things blowing up in the theater? Or are you perfectly content to watch that at home on your TV that's probably the size of Rhode Island anyway, because all of the TVs are these days? But I mean, what's the trend as you see it, Jed, in terms of people going back to theaters or not?
Well, the numbers are pretty clear. They're coming back. They started thanks to Tom Cruise with Top Gun, and then Barbie and Oppenheimer. But right now, the top four movies in the country are Godzilla, Kung Fu Panda, Dune Part 2 on a daily basis. You know, but there are things like One Love.
It's the Bob Marley movie.
Did very
yeah,
well.
Yeah, and came out of...
Perfect Days did really well.
Yeah.
The Vim Vendors.
Perfect Days was number one at the Charles last weekend.
Yeah.
And real surprises. And
yeah.
I think that is what gets back to this thing that the corporate people who, and I get it because they're betting lots of money, hundreds of millions or $200 million or whatever on a film and marketing, are nervous about it, and they keep looking for magic wands, and there aren't any. You know,
mm-hmm.
you have to make good movies. And when you make good movies, people will come, and I think the heroes right now are some filmmakers who've really stuck in there, Spielberg, Scorsese, and others who pushed very hard, Chris Nolan, pushed very hard to get their movies into movie theaters.
Yeah,
there's another hero. I have to say there's a hero named Donna Langley who runs Universal, which brought out Oppenheimer.
Point.
And she, in running that studio, yes, they tried to do IP movies like everybody else has done, like, you know, mine their own library, like The Mummy and things. But those didn't work. And she was she's been dedicated.
IP movie means exactly
intellectual
what?
Property,
ah,
you know, just
okay.
working
so
for
they
something.
Own it.
They own it, and they're kind of exploiting a previously owned, previously done thing. But along with trying those, she has really been dedicated to the one-offs, you know, to the mid-range movies and to movies, you know, they did Straight Outta Compton. I think they did. I'm pretty sure they were behind Girls Trip. I might need fact-checking on that. But she has really been very consistent. You know, she was the champion of Jordan Peele. She will put her neck out for these, you know, kind of risky endeavors that end up doing great with audiences and in theaters. So I would add her to the hero list.
You're making such a great point, because if you go before her to Lou Wasserman and Sidney Sheinberg, you know, that's the team that found Spielberg and nurtured him and stuff. And he just didn't pop out and start making blockbusters. He was a terrific director, great storyteller. But they supported him. And that's the gamble they have to make, whether they like it or not. They have to bet on artists.
And they have to go big, little, you know, little, medium, and big.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of heroes, listeners, I'm interested. Are you sick of superheroes? Do you have superhero fatigue? Do you have franchise fatigue when it comes to movies, given the fact that you had the summer to enjoy movies like Oppenheimer and Barbie, which were one of a kind instead of, you know, a series of superhero movies? So give us a call and let us know what you're checking out. 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org. Let's go to Michael, who's in Carroll County over in Hempstead. Hi, Michael. Welcome to the show. Thanks for checking in.
Hey, how are you doing? How's everyone? And greetings, Ann. I remember when you used to work for the Baltimore Sun way back when.
Oh, great times. Thank you, Michael.
Yes, and I just had a question. Speaking of risky, is John Waters coming out with anything new? We used to bump into him occasionally down at the Charles or at that little theater they had in Roland Park.
Well, he's working on it. As far as we know, Michael, he's working on trying to get some scripts greenlighted for quite a while. He does a lot of other things. He wrote a novel called Liar Mouth. There was a report in the New York Times, turns out to be erroneous, that studios had said yes to making a movie version of this novel, which is his most recent artistic project. That's not happening, at least right away. So yeah, he's working at it. But what are you seeing like this weekend, or what have you seen in recent weeks that you want to recommend?
Okay, what we saw recently was Cabrini, about the life Mother Frances Cabrini coming in from Italy, and again, especially for Women's History Month, I had some of my female friends talk about someone who didn't take no for an answer. She's like Mother Teresa on steroids. She got in the Pope's face, the mayor's face, played by John Lithgow, everybody's face. Have you seen that movie? It's amazing.
Okay, Cabrini.
Yeah. It's a great story. I did see it. I'm glad you got to catch up with it, Michael. It's, this is such a well-known name. I mean, the name Cabrini is on so many hospitals, so many schools, so many institutions, and I'd never known what she did. And I think the filmmaking is good. I wouldn't call it necessarily, you know, fantastic, but it tells a really important story. And you're right. I mean, she was just indomitable in terms of her dedication and her bravery, standing up to all these hierarchies.
Yeah, well, thanks, Michael, for that suggestion. I appreciate it. We have an email from Ben in Hamden who says, I have superhero fatigue. Genre and source material doesn't matter. I just want good films.
You know? Good. Well said. Well played, Ben.
Well played, Ben. So we're going to take a break. We'll come back and we'll talk more about what's out there. We'll talk a little bit about some of the new movies that are coming to town. So give us a call, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org. We're here with Jed Dietz, the founding director of the Maryland Film Festival, and Ann Hornaday, the chief film critic for the Washington Post. I'm Tom Hall. I'm not Chom Hall. I'm still Tom Hall. We'll see you in a minute.
This is Baltimore's NPR News Station, 88.1. WYPR.
And welcome back. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up Monday on our show, does the concept of majority rule still hold in American politics? In just a few years, 70% of Americans will reside in the 15 most populous states, but they will elect less than a third of the Senate. To think about that. Tom Schaller and Paul Waldman have thought about it. They've written a book. It's pretty controversial. We'll talk about it on Monday. It's called White Rural Rage, The Threat to American Democracy. Again, that's coming up Monday on Midday. And if you just joined us today, it's Midday at the Movies with our good buddies Ann Hornaday of the Washington Post. She's the author of Talkin' Pictures, How to Watch Movies, and Jed Dietz, the founding director of the Maryland Film Festival. So let's talk about a movie, Ann, that I think you really liked a lot, called Perfect Days. Mm. It's streaming on two different places. It's streaming on Apple TV and Amazon Prime.
Okay.
Interesting that you can get your choice there. It's about a guy who cleans toilets in Tokyo, directed by Wim Wenders, yeah. And I've heard great buzz about this movie.
I'll tell you something. You know, you joke about paint drying, and to think that there's a movie about a guy cleaning toilets that is a must-see, but I tell you, it is a must-see. And what happened was Tokyo has this thing called the Tokyo Toilet Project, where they commissioned several designers to design beautiful public restrooms. And they did, and they brought Wim Wenders in, this German filmmaker, to look at them, I think with the idea that he would make a documentary about the project. But instead, he was inspired to create this fictional story kind of wrapped around these beautiful, beautiful structures. And it is just exquisite. It's just a wonderful, poignant, funny, gorgeously filmed movie with these beautiful pieces of architecture and design that are just... I don't know. I guarantee it'll make you feel really good about the world.
Great, and you liked it too, hey, Jed?
Yeah, very much. And this project, which you can just Google Tokyo Toilet, and it'll take you right there. These were 17 star architects who designed the public toilets in Tokyo, Tadao Endo, and I mean, prize-winning stuff. And the buildings are so much fun to see, and this. Lead character, this is all fiction, the lead character, Wim Wenders has done things like Buena Vista Social Club, so he's done very good documentaries. This has a feel of that, but it's all fiction. But this lead character has the most wonderful playlist that he listens to as he drives around with the Animals and the Rolling Stones and
Louis.
Velvet Underground, Patti Smith. I mean, and so it's full of surprises. This beautiful little art film is just full of surprises. Yeah,
perfect days. We have an email from Alana in Pikesville who says, I saw One Life last week. Incredible, a most important story about a hero during the Holocaust. That's a good one as well, from what we were told, right?
I believe so, and I'm unfortunately not caught up with
You've
that
not
one
caught
yet.
Up. Okay. Yeah, because we
saw... But that's Anthony Hopkins,
yeah,
right.
We saw Zone of Interest. This is, of course, after it had, you know, won an Academy Award, but we'd heard so much about it from you guys, and it was, boy, that was that powerful.
And how about that music and that sound design?
Yeah, the sound design was amazing. Yeah,
absolutely.
Just, it was
really
haunting.
Incredible.
I mean,
really
it just
sublime.
Haunted me for weeks
afterwards. Yeah,
Here's one, The Taste of Things, which is also streaming on Apple and Amazon. This is Eugenie, who's a very well-established cook, and a guy named Doden, the fine gourmet that she's been working for the past 20 years. It's supposed to be pretty good, too. What do you think, Anne?
It is. It's a wonderful. This is sort of a, you know, this is that quintessential art house movie. It's beautifully produced. You know, it's gorgeous to look at. It stars Juliette Binoche, who's gorgeous to look at. And it's reminiscent of Babette's Feast or even Big Night. You know, it's this kind of delirious, sensuous, right? You know,
eating movies.
So yeah. it's very foodie. As I said in my review, it's the anti-Bear. No one's yelling corner, you know, or behind. You know, it's very soothing. It's very serene. I didn't think it was particularly, you know, deep or substantive, but it's a pleasurable viewing experience, and it's a nice little slice of escapism if you need that kind
Years ago, I threatened to have a dinner party where we all cooked dinner and we watch Babette's Feast and The Big Night together. And we just eat dinner and we watch these two food movies. And I never got around to doing it because I just never get around to doing half of what I say I'm going to do.
Well, having to provide food in the middle of those two films would be a little tricky.
It could be
intimidating. You'd have to make a timpano.
That's right, a timpano. Yeah. There's a movie called Wicked Little Letters. We have a clip from it. Let's hear the first clip that we have of Wicked Little Letters.
Dear Edith, you foxy ass old whore. Holy heavens.
No. Carry on.
Don't worry about me, Constable. I rise above it.
You really are a tricksy old f***. You belong in hell. Probably. And you're a sad, stinky b- as well.
In the end, I think it's just jealousy.
Well. This is a pleasant little ride at
Wake
the film.
Wake up, Baltimore.
Yeah, really. Gosh, what's this about here, Jed?
Well, it's based on a true story. It plays very much like the murder mystery things that are all coming pouring out of the BBC of the last few years. And it stars these two unbelievable actors, Olivia Colman and Jesse Buckley, who were in Maggie Gyllenhaal's first film, The Lost Daughter, just to sort of place them. They're both incredible actors.
Olivia Colman was one of the Queen Elizabeths in The Crown.
Yeah, and she was in The Favourite. I mean, she's a wonderful actress, and they clearly delight in having each other, in working with each other. It's about this, they fall apart. They see each other in 1918 is when the true story starts. They are friends, and then they become sort of enemies. I mean, not sort of. They develop into super enemies. And it's all around these filthy worded letters with all sorts of words we can't say on air. And some of the pleasure of the movie, if this would, I think, be a kick for a lot of people, just seeing these two actors read these letters to each other and other great actors that are also in the movie. So,
all right, we have another clip, actually. Let's listen. I haven't heard these clips, so I don't know how many beeps we're going to hear, but here's another one from Wicked Little Letters.
The father and I have been discussing a sermon I might give at St. Catherine's.
We're all positively fizzing with the idea.
And I had a passage I wanted to read to you, too. That's what I meant by good timing.
Twist of fate.
No, thank you.
No, thank you.
It's very short, quite energising.
Well, you don't want me any more energised. Not unless you want a good bannocking.
A physical threat? It's like a trapdoor to hell opens up everywhere you tread.
I'm not actually evil, you know.
No, but you've got evil in you.
You've got evil in you. Don't we all?
So it's so interesting, I'm sort of fascinated there's any clip you can really use. But there was a little girl, an actor in the movie, and they were very sort of uneasy about reading these letters in her presence and all that stuff. And her parents were on set, and the director, Thea Sharrock, had worked out everybody. And people just had a great time and hoots and hollers as they were reading all this stuff. This was a serious case. Both the principal characters did jail time over this. So it was, this is not, but they, it's amusing in the movie.
All right. Well, it's at the Charles Theater. Another one at the Charles is called Problemista. This is about a toy designer from El Salvador. And he's got interesting ideas about toys, and he comes to New York to try to make it work. It was written and directed by Julio Torres. Let's listen to a little clip of this one, Problemista.
Alejandro Martinez.
Yes, hi, let's speak.
Mr. Khalil's ready for you.
Thank you. Okay, look, you don't have a while. You have a month to find someone to co-sign your visa. And if you don't, you have to leave the U.S.
I started freelancing for this lady.
I'm late. I know I'm late. I'm so late.
This menu. What is it with walnuts? Walnuts, walnuts, walnuts. It's like a cafe for squirrels.
Walnuts, they go very nicely with the salad.
Do I look like I need educating on fine cuisine?
You think this lady can sponsor you?
I mean, we'll see.
We'll see.
Anyone who says a restaurant's like a cafe for squirrels gets my vote.
In a Scottish accent.
I like her.
In a Scottish
word. I like her.
Bird.
So, Problemista, what do we think?
Well, you know, that was Tilda Swinton that we heard in that scene. And Tilda Swinton elevates every single thing she's in, and she elevates every moment of this movie. I was most entranced with it when she was on the screen. A lot of people do know Julio Torres from his work on Saturday Night Live, and he did an HBO show called Los Spookies. And, you know, he has a very distinctive and singular sense of humor, which is very much on tap here. It was diminishing returns for me, the sensibility, but for a first feature, I thought it was a promising debut, and I'm eager to see more.
What do you think, Jed?
I would agree with all of that. Julio Torres is a totally charming guy. I've never met him, but I mean, just his persona in Saturday Night Live, and he was a writer on Saturday Night Live for a long time and was also in the cast for a while. And Tilda Swinton, I think you could watch her do anything. She just swings for the fences every time she gets a part and hits the ball out of the park. I mean, she's incredible. This is also about immigration. I mean, that clip you played shows it. So there's this, despite the sort of craziness of it, and Tilda Swinton's character, who is a sort of art dealer, her boyfriend, played by RZA in the movie, and they're trying to put together a show, and this character, Alejandro is going to have to leave the country, and he's under
His visa is about to expire.
Yeah, and he has no money, and he's got lots of pressure trying to immigrate to America, and his mom's trying to help him from El Salvador, and so there's a real theme going on. You know, whether it connects with you, he's a toy inventor. There's a kind of silliness to it that I think you'll either find charming or you'll get tired of it. Mm-hmm. He was going to call it. I heard an interview with Julio saying he was going to, the name of the movie, instead of Problemista, he was going to call it My First Movie. Oh. And then he said, then the second one would be My Second Movie. And I think he got the right title, and I can't wait for a second movie. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, worked for Chicago in the 70s. You know, Chicago, exactly. Chicago 2, Chicago 3.
Exactly.
Stephanie in Woodlawn says, I don't go to the movies. Sorry. She's apologized on YouTube. She says, the last time I went was when my sister treated me to Black Panther. So that's been a while. But she says, I've seen Barbie on HBO, and I hope when Oppenheimer becomes available, Barbenheimer is a thing for us stay-at-home moviegoers. So is Oppenheimer destined for streaming? Has it happened already?
It is already, yeah.
It is? So, all right. So, Stephanie, your wish has been granted. Yeah. You can stream Oppenheimer.
But we miss you, Stephanie.
Yeah.
It is more fun with people.
Yeah,
I'm just saying.
Treat yourself occasionally to a movie ticket.
Don't listen to these two, Stephanie. Don't worry about none of this pressure stuff. You know?
No pressure.
Let's listen to another clip from a movie that's also at the Charles Theater here in Baltimore called Love Lies Bleeding. This takes place in a gym with a bodybuilder who's about to go to a bodybuilding competition in Las Vegas.
Hey. So where did you appear from?
Oklahoma.
I've never been anywhere but here.
What were you doing with that big girl?
Get a lot of crazy-ass foreigners, mostly. How's it going, guys?
This here's Jackie.
Hi.
She needs a job. Says she'll do anything.
Yeah, you like guns?
Not really.
What the f*** are you doing here, then?
We're getting a lot of bleeps today, Tom.
We are getting a lot of bleeps.
What's going on? What's happening?
I don't know. It's still, for me, here? For me, the clip of the day is A Cafe for Squirrels.
No bleeps needed.
I forget about guns, and so I like the squirrels that might
that's
have their own cafe.
Right there.
But this is Love Lies Bleeding. It's got Anna Baryshnikov. That's a very famous last name. What do you think? It's at the Charles Theater.
And Kristen Stewart.
Amazing, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This is definitely, you know, there's sort of a little trend lit going on. Ethan Coen made his feature narrative directing debut recently with a movie called Driveaway Dolls, which is sort of, it's interesting. There's like a little mini trend happening with these sort of exploitation pictures featuring women, you know, on the lam, falling in love and, you know, doing sort of outsidery things. And with this one, you know, I thought like, we just heard a little bit of Ed Harris there, who has a supporting role, who I thought was completely mischaracterized. And I don't know, I didn't believe a word of it. And you're not meant to, because it goes into some kind of dreamlike surrealism. I don't know. You can tell I'm a little conflicted about this movie. All right, truth be told, I didn't love it.
All right, so Jed, color her lukewarm to cold. What do you think?
Well, this was a sensation at Sundance in the midnight section. It's not for everybody, I will tell you.
What's the midnight section at Sundance?
No, it's sort of transgressive films. Horror movies are often in that section. Murder mysteries, of which this would...
Do they screen them at midnight?
No,
is that
not
where
necessarily.
They call them that?
Oh. No, not necessarily. But they might be late in the day, which
I would miss those if they screened them.
Well,
just saying.
This, you know, I don't know all the business behind this, but the director has done one other film before, and I think this clearly got built financially around Kristen Stewart, and that was a good choice. And then they found this bodybuilder, this woman bodybuilder, to play Jackie. who is out of nowhere, I think. I mean, she's done a little bit, but just auditioned. And I thought the two of them were extraordinary. I thought that whole story was extraordinary. I liked Ed Harris, but Anne is exactly right. He's like off the planet. I mean, it's a go for it kind of performance. And you either will buy it or you won't.
I think it was the hair. Why would you do that? And if you know, you know. But like the hair, I just couldn't get over the hair choice there. But not his fault, by the way.
And the hair, by the way, not related to the fact that his last name is Harris. That's what you're saying. Okay, just want to make sure.
And I want to say he's fine. I mean, I'm not, none of this, it's the way he's written and the way that they build him visually, I just didn't buy. But he's always good. Right. So no shade on Ed.
Let's move on.
Okay.
Let's move on, because here's a movie. I don't think Jed's seen this one, but Ann, you've seen it. It's opening at the Charles Theater next week. It's called La Quimera.
Oh, yes.
So this is about archaeologists and their involvement in the black market for artifacts. So there is some derring do in this one, I bet. So what did you think?
This is actually really interesting. It's by a fascinating Italian filmmaker named Alice Rohrwacher, who's done, she did The Wonders and she did Happy as Lazaro. So if you know those titles and you know her work, you know she makes movies in this dream realm. You know, she does not exist in a typical linear narrative world. So you really do need to be prepared for this encounter if you go. But if you go, you'll be rewarded, because it's kind of this, it's an excavation, literal and figurative, of history and of memory. And like you said, they're archaeologists, but they're really tomb raiders, you know, this group of guys. It's set in the early 80s, and they're just digging up Etruscan vessels for sale on the black market. And one of their number is played by Josh O'Connor, the British actor, who I literally did not recognize for the first 30 or 40 minutes of this movie.
Wow.
He is fantastic. And Isabella Rossellini is in it, and she's great. And you know, I think that maybe Rohrwacher kind of lards it with maybe one or two too many ideas, and it gets a little too arcane and hard to reach. But she's somebody that I'm always interested to hear from. And I also want to make a plug. She was nominated for an Oscar a couple of years ago for a short film called La Pupille, which is exquisite. So and it is a little bit more tightly narratively constructed, and I think that does her some favors. But anyway, it's a fascinating movie, and he's fantastic.
We're out of time. I have to ask you a question from a listener, LB, who emails, Yo Capitano, any thoughts about this? I saw the trailer at the Charles, but it doesn't seem to have played here yet. Do you know anything about this?
No, I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
Same, sorry.
Okay, so, you know, if you saw the trailer, that would indicate that it's going to show up
eventually. Let's hope it
does. Okay. Yes, Ann Hornaday, film critic for The Washington Post, out writing a book about all the president's men. Very excited about that. So we'll miss you for the next few whenever, but we'll see you when you're back, and can't wait to read the book. Jed Deeds, next month we'll talk about the film festival.
Great.
Your baby there that you started from scratch back in the day. So thanks so much. Good to see you both. Okay.
Thank you. Coming up,
theater critic Jay Wynn Russick will join me with a review of The Squirrels. That's at the Maryland Ensemble Theater in Frederick. I'm Tom Hall. It's Midday. Stay with us.
This is Baltimore's NPR News Station, 88.1 WYPR.